Time now for our Ask an Expert segment. Each weekday morning at this time on KCBS, we're working to get answers to your questions about all of the widely varying aspects of the ongoing pandemic. Today, we're focusing on blood and blood plasma and their role in COVID-19 treatment. To answer your questions, I'm joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Richard J. Benjamin. He is Chief Medical Officer at Cirrus Corporation, based here in the Bay Area, and previously served as Chief Medical Officer of the American Red Cross. Dr. Benjamin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Maybe a little warm today, but fine.
Not much we can do about the weather, unfortunately. You know, fascinating stuff that you and your company have been involved in your career around blood. But I want to run a couple things past you first. First of all, this study that involved about 35,000 patients. There's a preprint version of this up involving the Mayo Clinic. These were people getting convalescent plasma while seriously ill with COVID-19. I'm sure you've been following this. What's your read on this?
Very interesting data indeed. The Mayo have an emergency use authorization from the FDA that many, many hospitals around the country have subscribed to use convalescent plasma to treat severely ill patients with COVID-19. I think the number actually is up to almost 60,000. Kelly published the first 35,000 now, but the experience, this is real, and it's happening in hospitals around the country today. They're getting convalescent plasma.
Okay, so let's talk about convalescent plasma. That's a term that maybe nobody had thought much about until recent weeks. What is it? What defines it?
It's taking the plasma from patients who recently had COVID-19, who've recovered, because they have an immunity to it, right? You develop antibodies to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and those antibodies are protective for somebody else if they get exposed. So the body makes specific antibodies that neutralizes the virus. And if you give those antibodies to somebody who's very ill or potentially getting very ill, you can potentially help them recover and not land up on a ventilator. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and for those who haven't heard this news, this study, at least the first phase of it, as you indicated, found about half the people in it, I think, were in the ICU. A quarter of them were on ventilators, and there was a statistically significant improvement in the mortality rate for those who got this plasma.
That's correct. It's very promising. It is a open label and a match control study, so it's not a randomized control trial. There are many randomized control trials going on that are smaller in the United States and around the world, but it's very promising data. And hopefully the FDA will move forward and allow more general use of this technology for patients while we wait for the vaccine.
Another thing that's happened in these last 5 months is a growing awareness of a lot of medical technology that most of us didn't pay much attention to before, but your company, Cirrus, is involved in one aspect. Can you explain what the equipment and the technology that Cirrus makes is and does?
Oh, right. Our founder, Dr. Larry Koresh, was practiced at UCSF during the HIV times in the 80s. And the company started in the early 90s with a vision to actually proactively kill any pathogens in blood, or sort of like sterilize blood products. And we have developed a process where we can treat platelets or plasma to pathogen reduce or pathogen inactivate proactively. It's FDA approved and being rolled out across the country. In fact, in use at UCSF and other hospitals in the Bay Area today. And we're developing a process for red cells. And so our vision is that you will have a process where we can, instead of testing, retrospectively testing for HIV and hepatitis, et cetera, and any new virus, we could actually inactivate them proactively and protect the blood supply. And you actually protect against pathogens before you even know that they're there.
Yeah, that's what. Well, that would be a home run, I guess, wouldn't it? I mean, to change a lot about the game of blood.
This is our vision, yes.
Okay, well, let's do this. Let's get to questions and remind our listeners that you can send them in while we're conducting the interview. Ask us at kcbsradio.com is our email address. Again, ask us, A-S-K-U-S, at kcbsradio.com. First one for you would be this one. There may be a public concern regarding convalescent plasma and how it's screened for HIV and hepatitis. Could you please explain in simple terms exactly how the blood product is screened and safe to transfuse?
That's a great question. So let's start from the basics. When you go and give blood, you have to fill out a questionnaire, and the blood center wants to know about your history, your medical history, your surgical history, and any risk factors you may have, like traveling to a malaria area. So the donor questionnaire is the first aspect of safety. The second aspect is the testing. And so there are, I think, now 12 different tests that are performed on blood for a variety of infections such as HIV and hepatitis, Zika, Babesia. And on top of that, we are developing an additional layer, which is this pathogen reduction treatment, where you can take platelets and plasma and treat them in the blood center before release to the hospital and inactivate anything you haven't tested for, most things that you haven't tested for. So when an infection like COVID-19 comes along and you're worried about whether or not it might be in the blood, well, you would have inactivated it, so you don't have to worry about that. We have had HIV come through the blood supply. We've had West Nile as a risk. We've had Zika as a risk. And our vision is that we would be proactively actually inactivating those viruses and not have to wait for a year or two to test it developed.
Okay. Our next question kind of goes down the same line. This one says, with the high percentage of asymptomatic COVID-19 cases, are there worries about COVID-19 being passed along in blood transfusions?
And that's a great question. It really is. And actually, in January this year, I had a call from Wuhan, China, when I just heard about the COVID virus from the director of the blood center there, saying that exact question, you know, what should we do? And had this discussion where I said, really, since at that time we had no idea whether it was transfusion transmitted, whether they should use a patch and inactivation technology, which they did. Now we've come to understand that this is a coronavirus. Coronaviruses are very rarely found in the blood. The testing is a nasopharyngeal test. It's not a blood test for the actual virus. So the risk is it's a low risk of transfusion transmission. Do we know that it's a zero risk? Well, no, we don't know that. We do know that very sick patients can sometimes have the virus in their blood. And we also know from China, where they screened about 8,500 blood donors, they actually had 4 donors that tested PCR or basically tested positive for the virus. They didn't know whether that was infectious virus, but it was there. So we think the risks are very, very low, but we don't actually have good data that they are zero. So I think that's the wise answer to that question.
Okay, fair enough. Next one says, hello, team. I'm a regular blood donor. Would the proposed phase 3 vaccine trial calling for 30,000 volunteers prohibit me from continuing to donate? And then goes on to say, I have what is called baby's blood. I'm going to show some ignorance here and say I don't know what that means, but you probably do.
I think I know what he means, what she means, should I say. Generally, blood centers or hospitals look for blood that are CMV negative, cytomegalovirus negative. About half of us naturally carry this virus, and it's not a problem for us, but it is a problem for babies. So folks who are CMV negative, especially if they're group O, are highly prized for as donors for babies. So perhaps this is what your questionnaire has.
Okay.
The question about vaccines. You would think that someone getting a vaccine for this virus would be a great donor for antibodies. The question, though, is that what kind of vaccine is it? You would need to call the blood bank and tell them what the vaccine is. Blood centers have deferrals for donors who've had a live virus vaccine, usually for a month after the vaccine. For other vaccines, it may be 2 weeks that you're not allowed to give. And if it's an experimental trial, they may have rules around that too. So the advice is call the blood center, tell them what you've had, ask for an opinion about when you can come in. It's not a permanent deferral, but it may be a few weeks before you can give blood.
Okay, interesting. Thanks. Next question. Will convalescent plasma stimulate T-cell immunity?
Another interesting question. Not directly. It's thought is that it's mostly the antibodies that are in convalescent plasma that are active, and that's not a T-cell immunity. But plasma has a lot of other things in it as well, and so its effect on the immune system in general is less well characterized. So the answer is maybe, but I don't know that it does.
Okay. Pretty quick, simple one, this next one. Is there an age limit for blood donation?
Another very good question, because it varies. It depends. The national age limit is 17. Most states now, though, will allow you to donate at the age of 16 with parental consent. So you need to get, a high school kid would need to get their parents to sign off if they're less than 17.
Okay. Let's see the next one. Do we know how much beneficial plasma a COVID-19 patient could produce? Would it just be a short-term thing, or could they go on producing for a while?
That's another good question. So what we know about the antibodies are that they're at the highest level in a patient the first couple of weeks after the infection. We also believe that they wane over the next few months. So the best time to give is 2 to 4 weeks after the infection has resolved, and perhaps for the next couple of months. You can give plasma on a weekly basis. So, you know, you can go back and give multiple times. But the chances are, after a few months, your antibody levels may have waned to a point that it's no longer useful.
Is the plasma donation done like typical blood donation? Is it more like the apheresis process? How is this typically being done, just as a kind of a point of order here?
Good point. It's usually done by apheresis. So we connect the donor up to a machine that sucks off their blood and spins out the plasma from the red cells, puts the red cells back into the donor, and that way it's just the plasma you're taking off.
I've been through this. It's a fascinating process. You do get cold when you're doing it, because the stuff they're putting back in is cooler than what came out. It's interesting. Next question. I know whole blood has a relatively limited shelf life. Is that also true for this plasma?
No. So plasma it's frozen. It's taken, it's tested, and then frozen. And you can keep it at minus 20 degrees for a year. So it's good for a year.
Okay, good. Next one. I keep hearing about using plasma from people who survived COVID as a treatment for new patients, but I never hear about blood transfusions as a treatment. Is there a reason for that?
Well, that's a common misunderstanding. Convalescent plasma is a blood transfusion. It's just that, you know, normally people think of whole blood or red cell transfusion. When you give a whole blood donation, the blood center will separate the red cells from the plasma, and they would be given separately to a patient. Convalescent plasma is just simple, normal plasma from convalescent patients. So it is the same as any other plasma that's given to patients. except it has these antibodies.
Okay, this question here says, I'm wondering whether every doctor or hospital treating COVID-19 patients is aware of these developments. I guess it's probably a broad question about how quickly these data and these results are being transmitted in, you know, these rapid moving times.
You know, I think physicians across the U.S. are very tuned into to anything that works given the limited number of therapies that are available. The simple fact that the Mayo emergency use authorization, that the first paper you quoted, has gotten up to almost 60,000 patients in the space of 2 or 3 months, severely ill patients, into hundreds, if not, you know, of hospitals around the country, is how quickly this has been taken up.
Okay. Here's one that says, knowing that so many people are carrying COVID-19 but never showed any symptoms, is there an effective screening procedure that might find more potential plasma donors?
So the answer is yes. The blood centers, American Red Cross, and the other large blood collectors such as Vitalant are now screening blood donations for antibodies routinely. They are performing an antibody test, and I believe they actually tell the donors the results if they're positive. So that screening is going on. It helps them to identify who would be a good donor and then contact that person afterwards. Yeah, so that's actually happening. They're screening probably 15,000, 20,000 people a day who give blood for antibodies.
Yeah, while you were answering that question, I clicked on the Red Cross blood donation page, and they do have quite a bit of information there. Help COVID-19 patients sign up to give convalescent plasma. So there's obviously a pretty well-organized effort underway on this, which speaks to how quickly people have pivoted during these times, I guess, right?
My understanding is that over 100,000 collections have been performed, or units have been collected of convalescent plasma already in the U.S. in
wow.
3 or 4 months.
And somebody with your background with the American Red Cross to see these changes, it must be kind of heartwarming.
You know, this is a time of great stress, but a time of great innovation. You're seeing new therapies coming out in papers routinely. It's also a time for us, you know, with our pathogen inactivation technology. We've seen great interest in our technology because COVID-19 is this year's pandemic, but we see infectious diseases come through the U.S. on a routine basis. We've seen Ebola, we've seen Zika down in Puerto Rico, they see dengue, they see chikungunya, we've had pandemic flu. This is not the last epidemic or pandemic we will see, and the next one may be transfusion transmitted. And so technology like ours that can proactively protect the blood supply is going to be incredibly important going forward.
Yeah, I've got one more for you, and I'll let you go. And this one probably reacting to what I said, and maybe I was a little wrong here. This one says, is donating plasma equipment similar to dialysis? If so, I've recently learned many dialysis machine staff are not aware there is an option on the equipment to warm the blood before putting it back into the person. I know this a while back. Maybe the option didn't exist then, or they just wanted me cold. I'm not sure.
You know, it's not quite the same as dialysis. Having said that, there are things called blood warmers that could be used. They're not generally used in donor rooms. We like to cover you in blankets and keep you warm that way. I don't have a good explanation. I think it's another technology, another complication.
I wouldn't want to scare anyone off. It's not like it was the worst experience of my life. It felt very good to do it in terms of, you know, the comfort I was giving to a friend going through cancer at the time. But yeah, it was a little interesting. Well, listen, Dr. Benjamin, thanks so much. It's been an enjoyable conversation, and we really appreciate the information you've provided.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You take care of yourself, please. Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. That's Dr. Richard J. Benjamin. He's Chief Medical Officer at Cirrus Corporation here in the Bay Area, previously the Chief Medical Officer of the American Red Cross.